Welcome, welcome. You're listening to our podcast, Two Massage Therapists in a Microphone. My name is Mark. I'm a registered massage therapist, registered kinesiologist here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. It's mid-December. We got a cool guest sitting on the other side of our Zoom. Amanda's sitting on the couch. I'm feeling like garbage, man. Yes. The room is spinning nonstop. I feel like I'm on a record player. It's pretty bad today.
Well, hey everyone, it's Amanda, and I was just saying to our guest Al, who's on the other side of Zoom, that I will give Mark credit for not being the typical man with a cold, because you always hear jokes about the man cold and how, like, when women get sick, we just power through and keep working because that's what we have to do.
And what
do
men do?
And men crawl up in bed and like, I'm so sick, I can't do anything. No, you're the exact opposite of that. I gave him so many opportunities yesterday and this morning.
Less man? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. Does that make him less man? Is that what we're saying?
You just said, you're just like, oh, typical men will do this, and you're doing the opposite. I'm like, wait, just a guy.
I was trying to compliment you, but now I quit. So no compliment for Mark. Let's just let him keep spinning on his record player. He dug himself in there. So yeah, we've got Elle on Zoom.
I've been even accused of toxic masculinity.
Yes, you have.
Whatever that means. What does that even mean? I'm dumb. Someone tell me.
Maybe we can ask our guest what toxic masculinity means.
What does toxic masculinity mean?
Yeah.
I think it's misogyny. I think it's when the stereotypical alpha male gets to a point where it's really disempowering other people. And I think my understanding is that it's also like toxic to men too. Like if there's this idea of exactly how a man should be, that's really not empowering to men either. So that's my understanding of it.
Well, then that person that said I was about toxic masculinity, they're wrong.
Well, I told you they're wrong.
That doesn't fit me at all.
That was a person who also doesn't know you.
Because I like fast cars, bikinis, and motorcycles.
Maybe. Oh, that doesn't sound toxic.
Thank you.
I think like mansplaining, like correcting, someone who has a PhD, like a woman who has like a PhD in something. When, you've read a blog post like that, that's like toxic.
What if that woman who has a PhD is incorrect in what they're saying and I, man, am pointing out that they may be incorrect?
Well, I think there always needs to be room for discourse, right?
Yeah.
I think like truth is truth and... I don't know. That's my two cents.
Well, as I was complimenting Mark, like I said, we'll take that back because he doesn't want to be told he's not like a typical man, but he is here feeling like garbage because we have Elle here, who is a licensed massage therapist and a business coach, originally trained in New York, now in Philadelphia. And we had actually set something up with her a couple weeks back, but I got sick and we had to reschedule. So that is why I was praising Mark, because we've already had to reschedule you once because one of us was sick, but he dragged himself in here today because he said, no, let's do this podcast. I can talk to her. No problem. So here we are. And before we start, I just want you to introduce yourself for anybody who doesn't know who you are, Elle, a little bit of background, how you got into this profession and what you're doing now with your coaching program.
So my full name is Ellen Browning Lafferty. I go by Elle Browning online. I became a licensed massage therapist in 2010, and I built my practice from like one client. I think I was charging like $65 an hour right out of massage school. And I built that into a multi-location enterprise where we had chair massage accounts all over the city. And we also had provided therapeutic massage in-house with my team. I disbanded and sold that business in 2020 so I could do coaching exclusively full-time online. I got my coach training in 2016. And that was really at a time where my practice was evolving and my team was growing. And I thought, I just want to be a better leader for my team. So I thought coaching would go hand in hand with that. And then also so much was coming up with my massage clients. I'm sure it's, we're all massage therapists here. We're no strangers to working on the body is also working on the rest of a human being, their past, their history, their traumas. And so I saw getting coach training as a way to be able to really bring a more full skill set to the table so that when clients would start talking about what was going on with them, I knew how to stay in my lane, but also hold space and ask questions in a way that would be useful to them.
Can I ask you a question about coach training?
Sure. Yeah.
As I mentioned to you when we had our phone call a few weeks back, that we have had a number of business coaches come on the podcast. And sometimes when a business coach reaches out and says, hey, are you interested in having me as a guest? Sometimes I'll say, can we hold off? Not because I don't want them, but I like to space it out because I don't want you guys to get lost in where people are like, oh, another business coach, another business coach. You're all very different and you do things very differently. And there is a place for all of you in the industry. So I always want to space them out a little bit when we do episodes with coaches. But I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mark, I think you're the first person that actually spoke about actually going and getting training. I feel like a lot of people fall into coaching because they become very successful in their business and they realize they have like wisdom to share with other therapists, for lack of a better way of saying that. But I don't, I was reading that on your website as well, that you actually went and took a program and got training to be a coach. What does that look like? Like, is this very generic? Are there ones specific to different professions? Like, how do you get training to be a coach?
That's such a great question. So there are tons of coach training programs out there, and I can't speak to all of them. I can speak to mine. I went to New York University to get coach training specifically because I know in the industry, there are so many coach training programs out there that get a bad rap because, you know, the industry is still figuring out how to kind of get regulated. And there's a lot of flack for people who, you know, maybe get their coach training through an online program that's maybe 6 hours, costs a couple hundred bucks. And I really didn't want to do that. I kind of already knew, I think, as a licensed massage therapist in the US, what it felt like to be underestimated and have people question my training. And so I was like, well, I'm just going to get a big name behind this and make sure I'm getting a good quality education. I don't think that means that other programs are bad. You know, I just can't speak to them. But my training program, what struck me so much about it was how it really echoed what I had learned as a massage therapist about how to stay within my scope of practice and stay in my lane. So things like learning how to frame a conversation where we are setting goals, where we are not prescribing, we're not diagnosing, we are really holding space and listening, and then framing the conversation in a way where we are taking steps towards forward movement, towards goal achievement. So it really just provided me with some information that I kind of already had through massage, being a massage therapist. And that's what I tell any massage therapist that want to become coaches, is I'm like, you probably already have a lot of these skills, but I think it can help to train professionally in it so that you know what you know.
Yeah. And I actually should have said, I shouldn't have said other people haven't had training. That was incorrect. It was that I looked at, as I said, I looked at your website and I saw that you went to NYU and I was like, oh, like this, you went to, as you mentioned, a big name and decided to get like a certificate or something rather than doing something online, which, as you said, probably there's nothing wrong with it. And I do believe a lot of the therapists that decide to get into coaching is because they really do have a lot of information that could be valuable to other therapists, and that's the next step, I guess, to get that information to everybody is decide to become a coach. But yeah, I found it interesting that you went to NYU, and I also found it interesting that they had a program like that for coaching. How long did it take you to get through that?
That program, it was just one semester at the time. It may be slightly longer now. I know it's certainly more expensive now, but NYU's program is really, they sort of base it around executive coaching, but they also, I mean, it's also life coaching, and they say that, but a lot of, a lot of like Fortune 500s with HR departments will send their team members to go officially get this training. But it's a great program and I highly recommend. My professor who created the program, her name is Paulette Rayo, and she was the former president of the International Coaching Federation in New York for I think like 10 years. And she wrote a book. So this is a great resource for any listeners who are maybe interested in exploring becoming a coach and learning how to frame some of these conversations, some of the coaching competencies. And her book is called transformational coaching. And you can order it anywhere. Like you can order it on Amazon. And it's, I would say it is a lot, maybe I'll get in trouble here. It's a lot of the NYU curriculum in a book. It's like $50. So if you want to really do a deep dive on what that training looked like, buy her book, Transformational Coaching. It's a huge resource. I still access
it. By the way, this author is not sponsoring this episode.
No, she's not. I'm sorry. I should say that. Paulette's not getting any kickbacks on this. But I think it's a good resource of books when we check.
All right. Sorry. So I cut you off at, you decide to get the coaching to
So why leave doing body work? So you start off one client charging $65. In your words, you create the empire. And then you have that for 10 years. You sell it off. Like, why? I want to know why. I want to know why that was that the end game for you. And why did the end game come 10 years in?
Thanks for that question. There are so many reasons. I was finding that I was not enjoying massage the way that I used to. I was physically getting really tired. Yeah, being a massage therapist. And of course, by the time, you know, I left the industry, I wasn't doing a lot of hands-on massage because I was really doing that part-time. It was really mostly my team, but I was getting really burned out. I think it has less, and what I've learned over time is I think it has less to do with actually the industry and the work and more of an internal process in myself that I was pushing my nose to the grindstone way too hard. And I was working all the time and I was not finding the kind of satisfaction that I once had.
Right.
And where I was finding the satisfaction was in my coaching work.
So with that overwork, as you're kind of describing it, nose to the grindstone, is that a big part of what helped build this empire though, right? I'm just asking because I imagine then that would be a big reason as to why that type of success probably came and probably came somewhat rapidly for you. But then that's also part of the reason why you're leaving and you get burnt out. It's a weird, it's not just you, obviously. This is a thing where it's this weird kind of, it's with this weird kind of big circle. And I get if someone does it, if their end game from the beginning was, okay, I'm going to build this, I'm going to kill myself, I'm going to build it, and I'm going to cash out in 10, or I'm going to cash out in 15. So I think what I want to know is, what was the game plan, or did you not have when you just kind of went with the flow of whatever kind of came your way?
Thank you for that question. The game plan was always just keep growing, keep going. And honestly, a lot of opportunities, once you kind of get that ball rolling, more opportunities come. You keep saying yes.
Right.
And so the game plan was I wanted to become known in Philadelphia, PA as one of the best therapeutic massage brands in the city. And it was also really important to me. We had a huge component of the business where we worked with nonprofits and provided chair massage. For example, like a big account we had was multiple locations around Philly, providing chair massage to the staff of health clinics that were in low-income neighborhoods. And so there was a big portion of like the business model that was about giving back. And the goal was to just grow and grow and grow. And at some point, it wasn't just the burnout. It was also kind of like, okay, I've done it.
Done it. Been there, done that.
You know? And also shout out to, there are some amazing, like so many amazing massage companies in Philly that I have so much respect that are, you know, known citywide. And I noticed that I really wanted something. My dream became bigger and I really wanted to start speaking to a more global audience.
So is that business still in operation?
I sold it off to my team like piecemeal because you have to think this was also during the pandemic and I was put in a position where I kept the business running for 6 months while we had to be closed. And then it was like, well, I can take out a loan and keep it going, or I can sort of sell it piecemeal to my team. And so for folks who want to keep going on their own, because part of my business model was training my team to have their own businesses and private practices. And so I sold it piecemeal to my team. So it's now going on in a number of, you know, sort of divvied up into different private practices. And one of my team members has a chair massage company of her own. So she took all the chair massage accounts.
Do you ever miss that aspect, or are you just so in love with coaching now?
Really?
I do miss. I think there's something that happens with career changes. And I've noticed this with a lot of my clients too. I think with every growth and every change, there's some degree of loss. And particularly when it's something that you spent so long building, I think there's grief. And for sure, there's also a certain amount. I mean, I'm being really vulnerable here, but like there's a certain amount of shame too, I think.
Shame.
Around, hey, I've built this thing and the time has come for me to end it because it's actually not making me happy anymore. And it wasn't a rash decision. I had been thinking about this for probably about 3 or 4 years. And full disclosure, my brother passed away in 2018 very suddenly. And we were very, very close. And so I think between that and the pandemic hitting, I was like, I just got to do what I love. Like life is way too short for me to be continuing on with something that it's not like I had a tough year. It was like, man, these are like a lot of years where like, I don't think this is it for me anymore. Mm-hmm. I think I'm really being called to do something different. So shout out to anybody else who might also be feeling that way listening to the podcast, because, you know, life expectancy is now longer than it has ever been. And I think we maybe have a lot of different careers in our lifetimes. And ideally we take what we've learned from one and we fold it into what's next. Hmm. So nothing's totally lost, but I think that's a really salient point. You know, I think these career transitions can bring up a lot of grief and shame even.
I'm actually really, I really liked your explanation on that. I don't know if you remember, but Mark and I were having this discussion.
I remember everything.
You remember everything?
Yes. All the time.
That was like the funniest thing you've ever said to me. God, I love you. You're so hilarious. Yeah. We were having a discussion recently, and I can't remember who we were speaking about, but we were talking about like a relationship ending, a relationship that had to end, a relationship that would like ultimately both people are going to be better off apart. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about how even though like, you know, this is better, like this is not good, there is still the feeling of grief, loss, shame, like all of these things still happen, even if it was the best decision, you know, versus when you get dumped. Okay. You get dumped. You're sad. It's awful. You feel horrible. You feel the shame. You feel the loss. But it still stings, even if it was you who, or even if it was mutual, or you who did the breaking up, knowing like this is best for me and my life ultimately is going to be better. Like in the long run, this is going to be better.
Right.
But right now, it still hurts. And I think with your analogy, like with the changing careers, even though you knew like this isn't it for me and I can do so many more things and it's better, there's definitely still going to be a feeling of like, because there was a lot of really good things in that 10 years.
I think sometimes that feeling might come, even though you know deep down that this is what needs to be done, just because you recognize it needs to be done doesn't mean you're ready for that to happen.
Yeah.
Right. So using that relationship as an example, just because we both know we're not supposed to be together and we're better off apart doesn't mean I have to break this. We should break this up right now because maybe we're both not ready for it.
Yeah.
Versus if we did this when we were ready, we'd probably walk away from this with less of that shame, with less of that sting, with less of that whatever. Do you know what I mean? When I sold my 2-seat convertible, it was the right thing to do. I was not ready to do it. I regret it all the time.
By the way, that was almost 10 years ago, and this story has been on many episodes.
Yes.
This hurts his soul.
And it was the right thing to do, but I was not ready. Had I waited 2 more years, I would have been ready, and it wouldn't have been this sad moment, and I probably wouldn't still sit back and go, I wish I had wind blowing through my hair in the summer. Do you see what I'm saying? But what do you do in the meantime when you know this is not good for you, but you also know you're not ready?
And I guess
this is inevitable.
Yeah. And I guess in Elle's case, being that it was in 2020, like it, even if it wasn't like she was ready to do that year, that was it. That got really rushed along because it was 2020. Yep. And like you said, it was, am I going to continue to drop money into this business when at that time, none of us knew when we were going to be able to work, how long we were going to be able to work, if we were going to get shut down. Like there was just way too many question marks. And I think a lot of people made really big decisions during that time out of necessity.
It will throw a little bit of panic in there too.
Yeah.
And I'm only just using my simpletonness as an example because I've walked away from a number of things, but I walk away from it because I know this is the end and I don't look back. I don't have that because I did it when I was ready to do it. So like, for example, when I was teaching formally at a massage therapy school, I was kind of running the program. I did that for 8 years. I wrote curriculum. And I was thrilled at the idea of I'm leaving because I'm ready to leave. And I would have my former colleagues from there emailing me and calling me and say, oh, they're changing around your program, blah, 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 blah. They're making all I'm like, bro, that's not my program anymore. I walked away from that and I walked away from it happily. I don't have an affinity to these things once it's expired on me because I wait till I'm ready for it. For the most part, like this Con Ed Institute stuff or this two massage therapists in a month, like the day we pack it up is not going to be a sad day for me at all. It's going to be a very thrilling moment because this is the time and this is when we should do it. And we're going to do it the way we want to do it. Do you see what I'm saying? I recognize like I'm in a place where I've created the luxury to do that. And not everyone is going to have that opportunity to yeah. walk away from something the way I'm proposing. But I'm also kind of planning for it too.
Yeah. I think Elle has a question for you. I'm watching her facial expressions.
No. I think I'm just really trying to understand better. So Mark, you're saying that your experience in your life has been that you feel prepared for changes that you have made. And you don't have any regrets, and aside from the convertible, but that like when it,
for the,
I just want to make sure I'm
for the most part, when the decision is mine to create the change or to go with the change, most of the time that comes to me when I'm, and I act on it when I'm ready for that change. I may have all these ideas of change or ideas of new things to do or new ways to go. And I don't necessarily act on it until I'm absolutely ready. Now, that creates a whole other shitstorm, to be honest with you. You may have, and Amanda might, and other people might go through the emotions of this is a new thing and I kind of miss the old, right? Or I kind of miss what I did. I have this period of the end of the old thinking I fucking can't stand it, but I'm not ready to walk away yet. Do you see what I'm saying? So I have that kind of plan it where I have this weird kind of grieving thing that happens at the end of the old thing versus the beginning of the new. And that way, when I walk into the new, I'm like, fucking great. Like, I burn that bridge.
Pre-grieve then, Mark? That was exactly the question I was going to ask, but I was like, oh shit, man, this is too personal. Do you pre-grieve before change happens? And then, so it sounds like once it happens, you're like, I'm fully behind this.
Yes. I'll talk from a business standpoint first. Most of the times when I walk into a business deal that I'm going through, something that I'm working on, I have an idea of what the end game is going to be. Right. So I'm already kind of prepared for how this end game is going to rock and roll. And the end game might be approaching and I know it's approaching. And therefore, I kind of wallow in this now. And then I don't pull the trigger on it until I'm absolutely ready to rock and roll with the next. That's kind of the way the business stuff goes. The personal stuff. Well, last year, my father passed away.
I'm so sorry.
Like, knew it was coming. Prepared myself as much as possible. Happened a little quick.
Knew it was coming. Well, no, it was very fast.
No, his health declined rapidly within the last month.
Yeah.
But I mean, earlier in the year, I'm like, my dad ain't getting any younger. And his health is just deteriorating. Like, I always used to say this about him in his later days. It must be tough because he's counting the days till he goes. He sees his brothers and sisters have died. The friends that he grew up with have died. His cousins have. And he's just looking in the mirror going, when am I next? When am I next? And I was kind of understanding of that. So I was prepared, but it still hit me hard, right? So there's some things that no matter how much I prepare for, and I know this is an extreme example, but there's that I can't help when the change comes that I'm still wallowing and stuff. But that's also more so beyond my control than me deciding I'm going to leave this job or I'm going to leave this business opportunity and pursue another one. Stuff that I have tons of control over, yeah. I tend to have the end game in mind.
In pre-grieving, I think is the perfect way to describe the way Mark handles things. Actually, Elle, that's exactly it. So another personal example being that we're moving in a couple of months, and we made the decision, and it is the best decision for all of us. Mm-hmm. It's happening a little sooner, I think, than we expected it to, but it is 100% the best decision. And ultimately, our life is going to be better. I feel I'm going to be really, really sad when we have to leave the home we're in now because I wasn't ready for it. And Mark, initially when I brought up to him, I think that this is what we should do. We should move. At first, he was like, are you fucking crazy? Like, no, he was like not even willing to listen to me. Like, it actually started like this tense moment where he like was even like upset that I would bring up something so ridiculous because we actually really love where we live. Mm-hmm. And so I just was telling him, this is why I think so. Like, these are all the reasons I think this new place would be better for us. And about 24 hours later, he comes to me and he's like, I agree with you. You're right. Let's go.
Let's go.
And I was like, what? And then suddenly he had like no affiliation to our old home. I say our old home. We still live there. Mm-hmm. But suddenly, and I was like, you're not going to miss this place. He's like, no, I let it go. Mm-hmm. Like, the fuck? 24 hours ago, you yelled at me for even suggesting that we move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everybody processes things in their own way, in their own time. And I think this idea of like, how do we grieve and how it's actually related to the losses of people in our lives as well is a central theme for sure. And that's part of why, like, so the last piece of my sort of intro in talking about myself is I am a family constellations facilitator. And so that's sort of how I've deepened some of my coach training. And family constellations deals with all of this. It deals with intergenerational trauma. It deals with the people in our lives who are no longer there. And this has a huge impact on the decisions that we make in our businesses, in the rest of our lives, and where we choose to live, where we choose to work. And it's really key in a lot of the coaching work that I do with clients, because there's always resistance that comes up on our way to achieving anything new. And tracing it back to like, what are these original blueprints? Where did this all come from? Is illuminating and ultimately, I think, really freeing.
Family constellation. I've actually never heard of that. I read it on your website and I didn't know what it was. So I want to come back. I want to circle back to that. But I know if I don't let Mark ask his question, he's going to forget.
Even though I said I don't forget anything. Or no, I said I remember everything.
And I said that was the funniest thing you've ever said to me. Go ahead.
I remember everything is not quite the same as I forget stuff.
Okay.
There are fine differences there.
Gotcha.
Any which way, when you decide you're going to be a massage therapist, and we didn't even figure out as to why you decided to do so, which I'd love to hear that as well. When you decide, I'm going to become a massage therapist, then you graduate school and you've got your license and all the rest of it. In that time, did you know this is not something that I'm going to keep doing for however long? Did you have an idea that there's going to be tons of change that's happening? Like, when I went to massage school, I'm like, this is not something I'm going to just, I don't see myself doing this for decades, just this thing in a room and mm-hmm. touching a body. Did you feel that way? And then we'll circle back. Did you feel that way?
Well, no, I never even actually thought I would do massage as a full-time career. I actually did the program thinking like, this is a cool skill to have and a cool license to carry as like a permanent side hustle. And then it became my entire life.
I'm actually kind of jealous of the people that take our courses or people that we help prepare for their licensing exam. And they're so hot on it. They're like, I love it. I'm going to do this forever. Blah, blah, blah.
The ones that have so much passion and they like jump like head first. It's so cool to see. But that was none of us, apparently.
So what made you decide massage? And then when you're in it now, what are your thoughts with regards to everything that we just kind of went through?
So I became a massage therapist. Let's see. I went to massage school in 2009. So I had been living in New York prior to that. And the 2008 financial crisis hit. I was doing like the starving artist thing in Brooklyn. And I was like, you know what? I graduated college a few years ago. Like, I'm really feeling like I need some direction in my life and I don't know what to do. And so I started following my interests. I was like, all right, what do I love? I had studied Reiki at the time and was like doing Reiki for fun. I was like, well, I know that I like working with people and their bodies and sort of like holding space with people. I'm like, well, how can I do that professionally? And so I talked to a mentor who is a shiatsu practitioner and I was like, I think I want to do Reiki full time. And she was like, I love your ambition. That's great. maybe you want to also add to that skill set with something that's a little bit more easy to market. And she suggested massage school. And I went to one open house and I was like, yeah, this is the logical next step. This is what I want to do. And when I was in massage school, I thought, well, I definitely want to have a private practice because I don't know, I'm just like really stubborn and I don't like being told what to do. I'm very ambitious. And I'm like, I'll figure it out. Like, I'm just gonna have my own business. And at the time, like in 2009, I thought, you know, if I can like work from a home office in West Philly and earn a decent income there, just being self-employed, like I'll be really happy with that. But you know, that was like me in my late 20s. I'm not shitting on it. Like, I think that's great. And at the time that was the ambition, but I think again, like once you attain certain goals, you start to want other things. And as you grow as a person, you evolve and you develop more interests and you follow those too.
So when you said, yes, this is the logical next step, I'm going to go back to Mark's question then. Did you have any thought beyond that step? Did you think this is the next step and final step? Or did you think like things are going to come out of this? Or are you just the type of person that's, as he said earlier, like just open-minded and like, let's see what opportunities come?
I think if we're going to take a snapshot of my mindset in massage school, I thought probably for the next decade or two, at least, I will be a massage therapist with a private practice.
Okay.
I think that's what I thought at the time.
I mean, you made it a decade. So,
yeah. Well, and again, I really want to reframe here. Like, I don't think that evolving your career means you're giving up on anything. I think you're bring all of the wisdom and experience mm-hmm. with you. And what I see far too often is people getting, it's the sunken cost fallacy. Like, well, since I've come this far, since I've invested this much in this specific path, I'm never going to leave it. And I think it's a trap. Mm. And that's different than saying, this is really hard and I want to give up. Those are two different things.
Yep.
And I think that discernment is really key.
Yeah. And I, you're right. When you are evolving, it's not that like you didn't leave massage. You're still working with massage therapists. Like you're still, I mean, you're literally on a podcast called Two Massage Therapists and a Microphone right now. So you're still
honored
in the world. But
yeah.
As you said, you've evolved. And I want to go back to, you know, when Mark asked you, why did you leave? And you said, I just started to see my coaching business like taking off. So let's go back there. Like in 2020, now you've sort of given your team or sold your business in pieces to your team. They're doing what they're doing. How do you dive into coaching? Like, did you already have a business that was going and then you just dove into expanding it? Or did you rebrand the whole thing? Was it a whole new business? What happened in 2020?
It was in a way a whole new business because what I had been doing between 2016 and 2020 was coaching my team. Like I said, it was part of my business model that I wanted my team to have something in it for them that was more than a paycheck, because we know about the high rates of turnover in the massage profession, particularly when you're working for somebody else. So I was largely coaching my team, and then I was doing not business coaching, but actually with my massage clients, incorporating coaching into their therapeutic work, the hands-on therapeutic work. So it really was, in a way, like starting a whole new business. At least that's how it really felt at the time. And so how I did it was I used my existing network and my contacts there, and I started to develop more of an online presence. And I got really clear on the specific kind of coaching I wanted to do, which I was like, I want to do business coaching. And I started, you know, working as you do, sort of a lower price with new clients so I could get testimonials. And I was working with a lot of colleagues at the time. What had happened by the time my business had, you know, grown to the point it did, I was getting a lot of requests for like, hey, can I take you to coffee and quote unquote, pick your brain? And I always loved doing that, but I was recognizing like, wow, I'm really giving away a lot of free coaching here to people who are asking to quote unquote, pick my brain. So I kind of, you know, it was a great opportunity to monetize that. when you start realizing that you're already doing the work for free, it's, you know, again, a logical next step to start charging for it when you know you're qualified to do that.
Mm-hmm. Who are your clients, or who is your ideal client? Who should contact you for coaching, and what are they going to get from you that, I mean, this is maybe a very loaded question, but what are they going to get from you that's different from other coaches in the United States?
Yeah. So I work primarily with holistic practitioners. So it's a lot of massage therapists and also some family constellations folks and talk therapists. My ideal client is looking to figure out what is the next step for them in their career. They're usually solopreneurs or small business owners, and they know that they want to create some sort of change, but they need more clarity on exactly what that looks like and the next steps to make it happen. So this can look a number of ways. I've had, you know, clients who are just building their private practice for the first time, like massage therapists, too. Massage school owners who are transitioning into retirement, and everything in between. You know, I'm looking at adding a second location, or I'm looking at expanding my team, or I want to develop an online presence and online programs. How do I do that? Usually the folks I work with are people who see something in my story that resonates with them, and they see something I've done, and they just want some accompaniment while they do that same thing themselves.
Have you ever come across someone that they want to do something, they're thinking about doing something, and you're like, that's a dumb idea. that's you can't see the value in it. You can't see how it's going to be profitable for them. And if that ever comes your way, how do you deal with that? What does that look like? What does that conversation sound like?
I think to maintain integrity when people are about to take a step in a direction that you, in all likelihood, no, it's not going to work out well for them, I think you have to give fair warning and back it up with logically why. But where I go then is, what is at the root of this dream that you have? What is your why behind it? What is the driving force behind it? Because when we can uncover that, there is usually something there that actually can come to fruition. Mm. So for example, if someone's like, I want to build, I want to quit my day job and I want to build $1 million business in 1 year in a completely different field than I have any experience with, I would say, love your ambition. It's great. what is so unsatisfactory about your current situation? And what is it that you're actually hoping to gain with this $1 million business? Is it a sense of pride in yourself? Is it a sense of security? Is it wanting to be seen by the world as something different than you are now? Let's figure out what that is. And then let's figure out an achievable goal around that, because you probably can address those concerns and have those needs met, you know? So I think it's about like kind of deconstructing what the actual need is that is being covered by a dumb idea.
You could say ridiculous. It's okay. I'm gonna piggyback on Mark's question then. Do you turn people away? So we've had other coaches who say, you know, we do like some call it a discovery call or whatever to make sure you're a good fit. Do you ever
make sure you're coachable?
Yeah. Do you ever have these type of interactions where you realize right away, like, this is not the client for me? And how do you let them down easy?
Well, you know, I think of it more so as like, I'm not what this person needs right now. I'm not the best fit. And how can I use my network or what I know to help them move in the direction of what they actually need? So if a coaching client is not a good fit, or for example, even if they have, this happened before, like some mental health issues, something like that, I might say, you know, and it's true, like none of it's like gaslighting people or sugarcoating it. It's just saying like, I actually don't think I'm the person to meet your needs right now, but here's an idea of who might be able to, or a book or a resource or something that I think actually is meeting you where you're at right now that will help you in the way that you're seeking to receive help.
So do you have a pretty decent network of other coaches or mentors or people that you can refer to if that does come across?
It's always growing. It's always building. I don't think it's ever like as robust as it's going to be in, you know, 20 or 30 years, but even, and it doesn't always have to be another coach. It can be, like I said, other resources. Yeah. Like, have you checked out this organization or this book, mm-hmm. Or this podcast, to massage therapists in a microphone?
Don't listen to them. They'll teach you nothing. Yeah. Well, I'm asking that because I've been present in the room when Mark does his consultations. So I don't know if you know this, but one of the things he does is he does preparation for people who are doing their licensing exams, mainly for people here in Ontario, but there's a couple of other provinces in Canada whose exams are similar to what we have here in Ontario. Yeah. So people will contact him, say, you know, I challenged the exam, I failed, I'm redoing it on this date. I heard that you could help me prepare. And so he always has them set up a 15 to 20 minute consultation to make sure that he can help them and they're a match. I have been present where he has said to someone, actually, based on what you're telling me, what you need is a tutor. That's not what I do. You know, he explains what he does. And he'll say, like, I know that you can look up on, you know, maybe this Facebook group or try this person or whatever who might be able to offer what you need. And I've heard people, it doesn't happen often, but I've heard people like almost arguing him, fighting him, like trying to sell themselves to him. And I'm like, this is very strange to me because I feel like he couldn't have been more upfront and honest to say, like, you're not going to get what you want from me. And so it's so bizarre to me when they're fighting him because I'm like, well, why would you want to pay him X amount of dollars and you're not going to get what you're expecting? Like, your expectations will not be met here. He's telling you that. Where do you think that comes from? The people, or have you ever had that happen to you where people are like, no, I think you're exactly who I should be seeing?
Yeah, well, I think it comes from some sort of projection onto the coach or the teacher that this client thinks that this person will meet a need. And I'm just going to flat out call it like it is. It's usually a parent. So Mark, I'm wondering how many of those people really need a dad. And they really did not have a dad who had answers and who could show them the way and who could say, I'm here to help you. And so when you tell them no, it's like triggering a child self saying like, no, dad, like but I need you though. And so it's actually like not really about us. It's more about the client's needs. And so I always think redirecting to that, you know, is a way to get to the heart of what's going on. I'm curious, Mark, do your like coaching clients ever seek you out, you think, for maybe the ways in which you are like fatherly or an authority figure, or are you like, that doesn't resonate at all?
I've never really given this any thought. I'm normally a well thought out guy.
This is going to give you a new thing to think about.
But I've never given that a thought at all.
I think a lot of people
I'm too simple for
come to him initially because if they're in any RMT groups in Ontario and they say like, you know, I failed my exam, what do I do? Mark now has been doing this for a decade. So he's got the reputation of being, you know, a guy who could help you out. So a lot of people will drop his name and he sometimes will chime in and say like, reach out if you want to book a consultation. And he's very upfront in his consultations. Like, I'm doing this to make sure that we're a good match and I can meet your needs and I can help you. And if I can't help you, you know, like you, Al, he has a network of people that he has been building over the years to say like, this person does this, like see if they can help. And I feel like sometimes the ones who are like trying to sell themselves after, I think it's because people have put in their minds, like, this is the, like, Mark is the reason that I was successful. Yeah. It was like, they don't take any of the credit on themselves. Right. And so when somebody is in this moment of like desperation, like I've got to pass this exam and people are saying the reason I passed was Mark.
It's never the reason.
It's not the reason. They are the ones doing the work. You're doing the coaching and there's other people that can do the coaching.
Yep.
But I think once they have in their mind, like Mark is the reason, then they got to have you. Mm. That's it.
Oh man. I don't know. I imagine that might feel like a lot of pressure or I don't know. It seems like, Mark, you wear that really well, though.
I don't really feel a lot of pressure with it, to be honest with you, because the same way if I were to take all of those accolades that come with it, that I got to take all the shit that comes with it. So I choose to accept neither. Do you know what I mean? So if you say something great,
if you accept credit, you have to accept blame.
Exactly. So if you said something great about what happened here, hey, but that wasn't me. That's all you. You did the work. I just kind of held your hand a little bit and you found your own way. And it didn't have to be me. It could have been somebody else. And so I reject that idea. And that way, if someone says, that was shit, your course was crap, you're a shit person, I'd be like, well, you know, it's the same way. It just rolls off my back like water on a duck.
Water on a duck.
I think that's so true. Like, ultimately, it's really about what clients are bringing to the table. Yeah. And I found that to be, you know, obviously we bring our programs and we do our best, but I think the outcome is largely dependent upon the client and what they're investing and putting into it.
And I brought that, I'm seeing music scores behind you on a music stand. And I brought that in from when my music days, like anytime someone's like, that was a great show, that was a great set, you're an awesome bass player, I just didn't let it, it just didn't even enter. The same someone would be like, that was the shittiest set I've ever heard you guys play, you made so many, I just wouldn't take it either. I just leave it all on the stage.
That's so cool. All right, we need to talk about like prior careers here. Okay.
She did say she was a starving artist.
I was, yeah. And I play violin too. That's in the back. That's just for fun. And Amanda, I'm curious about you too. Like, so did you guys, what were your careers prior to massage therapy?
I was definitely not an artist. I should not sing nor play instruments nor do anything musical because some people are not meant for the stage. It's me. I'm some people. prior to going into massage, I worked in fitness like Mark did. We both have our university degrees in kinesiology. And upon graduating, I didn't know what I was going to do. And this was prior to Ontario becoming regulated for, because I don't know if you know that kinesiology is regulated in Ontario, but I graduated, you know, in the Stone Age, so it was not regulated. I say that even though Mark graduated like 10 years before I did. Anyway, it wasn't regulated. I didn't know what to do, so I just went into what I knew, which was fitness. I was not an athlete per se when I was younger. Like, I would join some like recreational sports. I was kind of like sort of okay at a lot of things, but not really great at anything. But I was really into just health and fitness and wellness. And, you know, I would run and I was a weightlifter. Like, I loved doing that. So I went into fitness. And then after not even a full year of going back into fitness, I was like, this is not my life. Like, I just did this because it was logical, because I have a degree in kinesiology. But I don't, like, this is not my life. So I started spiraling. Like, what am I going to do? I was only 23. You think that I wouldn't be so stressed out.
Oh,
but I
was so young.
I was
so
stressed.
Yeah, but you feel
stressed.
Like you should be so much more grown than you actually, you know,
yeah,
are at 23.
I got really, really stressed out. And when I decided to quit the job I was doing, I was actually a general manager at a fitness club. And it was just not an ethical company. It was not, they did not live up to my standards, my values. I was like, I can't work here. Like, I feel literally slimy being staff at this place. So I quit, and my parents, my boomer parents, you know, their mentality was, well, you have to do something. Like, I felt like I wasn't allowed time to breathe and think, like, what do I want to do? It was like, you have to go do something. You can't just not have a job and not be in school. So I decided I got to come up with a plan quick. And I started going back through all of my university courses. And I remember there was one course I took in ergonomics that I was really fascinated by. And then that led me down a whole other path. Anyway, moral of the story is I decided I'm going to go into occupational therapy and I'm going to work with maybe children with special needs. Maybe I'll work in the school system. Like, I wasn't sure. So I decided what I need right now is I need a desk job. I need to find a job where I can sit for 8 hours a day so I can focus. Outside of that, I can, you know, on my breaks or whenever, if I can, you know, get time to myself, I can focus on applications to go back to university and get my master's in occupational therapy. That's what I'm going to do. So let me go find a desk job that's going to pay the bills and keep my parents off my back. So I did that. I got a job working at a private college in the admissions department. And the same week that I was hired, they had hired a guy to develop the massage curriculum. And so I then found out that if you're an employee at this place, you can go to school for free. And I was like, well, that's cool. But what am I going to do here? Like, there's no programs that I'm interested in. And one of my colleagues said, you know, they're starting a massage program. So I decided I'm going to find this guy that they hired to develop a massage program. I just want to find out a little bit about massage therapy as a career because I knew nothing. I had never even had a massage before. And
like a smart guy.
Enter Mark. So I meet Mark and I'm like, talk to me about the career. I said, don't talk to me about school because I'm an excellent student. Like school is not a concern for me. Just tell me about the career. Why do you like what you do? Do you like what you do? What are some things that make it unique? And I tell you, within like 3 minutes of talking to him, I was like, this is what I'm going to do. He's like, I have the most stress-free life you can imagine. He goes, I go to work. My clients like me. They're happy to see me. People leave in a good mood. I feel good because I make them feel good. And I don't bring my work home with me. And I work when I want and I don't work when I don't want. And I was like, holy fuck, why isn't everybody doing this?
Right?
Like, yeah. What the hell? I was like, yes, that's 100. That's what I want. Like, I can help people. I can use the knowledge and skills that I have had with my kinesiology degree. And I can have a pretty flexible life. And I started thinking ahead to like, then, as I said, it sort of got into my mind, like this can be a permanent side hustle. Like if there's other things in my life that I want to do, I can do that along with, you know, I take a few massage clients a day. Like it just seemed like such a perfect thing to do. So I decided, yeah, I'm going to do that. But yeah, I was not an artist. That's just you guys.
No, but I hear the through line and the thread of the kinesiology and the fitness and the body-based stuff. And then sort of like this whole arc through the desk job and finally into massage. I'm so impressed with what you guys have built with your various brands. I mean, it's really incredible. It's really incredible. Do you guys have advice for I'm curious because it sounds like you have built these different brands, these different businesses, right? Like, what was that trajectory for you? How did that evolve for you into having like teaching online and having a podcast?
Do you want to take this or me? Because I feel like you and I might have slightly different interpretations, but you can jump in.
Go.
So I will give you the Coles Notes version of this. I was about 2 years into massage
Cliff
practice.
Notes for all you folks in the States.
Sorry, Cliff Notes. I forgot I'm talking to an American. All the things. Have I said niche yet? If not, it's not a niche. It's a niche. Anyway.
I'm in agreement.
Yes.
Niche.
Yes.
Yes.
Canadians. So yeah, the shortened version is I was about 2 years into practice. I was approached by somebody who wanted to develop a business course for RMTs, but wanted an RMT on his team. And he was a client of mine. And he said, you know, I'm impressed with the way you run your business. That was a huge compliment because I really didn't know what I was doing. My massage business, yes. I really didn't know what I was doing, but I was always the type of person that felt confident in my ability to establish authority and really make people like feel like you can trust me and I'm the person that's going to help you. Like, even though in the back of my mind, I was like, oh, like, was that treatment the best it could have been? Am I doing, like, is this treatment plan totally, like, I would question myself, but that never showed outwardly. It was just everybody that came in, I would do my assessments, I'd put them on their treatment plan. And what he was impressed with was that every single client, when they left, they would just go to the front desk and say, Amanda said I have to come back on Thursday. Like, and he's like, it's just like clockwork. He goes, your people come out and they know what they have to do. And he's like, you're always busy and everybody just seems to respect your opinion. And I was like, wow, like that's, thank you. And it was such a compliment. And then he said, I would love for you to partner with me and develop this business course. And then that little voice in the back of my head said, you're a fraud. Like, no, you can't.
Oh,
you can't
develop. Imposter syndrome.
No, you can't develop a business course. What the hell do you know? You've been a massage therapist for 2 minutes. You've never really done anything other than run this practice. And the way I looked at it is I didn't give myself any credit for being busy. It was a busy clinic that I walked into. I was taking over for a therapist that was moving out of the country. So it's not like her patients were following her. Like, I kind of walked into a gold mine. So I was like, this isn't me. This is just, you know, my circumstance. And looking back.
Yeah, but you ran with it.
Well, yes. Looking back, I know that it was a big part of it was the way that I did run the practice and the way I related to my clients. But at the time, I was like, no, I can't do this. So I said, however, my fiance, I think we were engaged at the time. My fiance has run a business. I don't remember.
I'm kidding.
My fiance has run a clinic. Like, he's been a business owner, and he also teaches massage therapy education. He has his adult teacher training certification. Like, there's so many reasons why he's the guy you should work with. And my client was like, okay, like, I'd love to meet him. He's like, I would love to work with both of you, though. Like, he saw value in me. And so I brought it to Mark and I said, would you be interested in doing this with me and this client? And he was like, yeah, let's do this. I don't even know if I expected him to say yes, but he seemed to get really into it. And like within seconds, he was like creating PowerPoint slides and watching him work. Oh man, the imposter syndrome came back times 1,000. So it's like, how do you just know how to do this? Like, he was just creating. And so we put together that first course and we ran it twice in Toronto, and the response was incredible. And at the time we like heavily overpriced it, but people were buying it. And I was just like, wow, I didn't expect it to be this great. And then for Mark, I think that lit a fire under him, because as he said, he had been teaching formally and he had been thinking about, I need to transition for a while, but obviously not ready yet. And then once that course got really successful, he decided, I'm going to develop another one. So he developed a joint mobilizations course. He ran that a couple times in Toronto. Again, it was really successful. And then, you know, we decided to have babies and stuff. So things kind of took a pause for a minute. And when our daughter was about a year and a half old, Mark came home from work one day and he was like, that's it. I'm just done. I am not happy teaching formally. He's like, the thing that made me the most happy is when we were teaching our continuing ed classes. That's what I want to do. And I said, okay, then do that. So he literally quit his job within 24 hours of us having that conversation and just started creating. Like, I watched him sit for hours and hours and hours in front of his laptop and just creating content and courses and, you know, looking at what's missing in massage education or where do therapists struggle. And because he'd been teaching for so long, he knew where the holes were. So, you know, from joint mobilizations, it went to assessments and then, you know, exercise therapy and all these things that he feels that therapists could benefit from. And all of a sudden he had this roster of, I don't even know how many courses. And we connected with the school that we worked at and said, hey, can we like use your classroom space and run some continuing ed classes? They said yes, you know, obviously for a fee. And we just started running them. And as we were going, it was getting more and more popular. We had part-time, massage became our side hustle. And then within a couple of years, it was so busy that we got our own office space. We quit our day jobs and went like full into education.
That's amazing.
Did I get that all?
Mad props.
Yeah, it sounds.
Sounds like there's like a lot of inspired work there. And coupled with really rooted in so much experience.
Yeah. I think that the continuing ed was something that was on his radar before I ever approached him with my client's request. And so that's why he said yes so quickly. Like I said, I wasn't even sure if he would be interested, but this was already on his radar. And this was just kind of the thing to get going, because this client was going to do this with or without me. If I said no, he was going to go find another RMT. So, I mean, I've thanked him before on the podcast. Like, that kind of was really what got us moving. And then in 2018, we found ourselves in a place where we would have had to pivot again. And our business was going to be struggling a little bit because of some changes with our regulatory body. So that's when Mark said to me, I think we should start a podcast. You know, like, let's keep ourselves relevant. Let's do something. And also, like, to provide value. That's always been in our marketing strategy, is make sure that we're always giving people something that they need and showing that we, you know, we do have stuff of value to share with you. And so he decided, let's start a podcast. I said, okay, what's a podcast? That was literally the first sentence out of my mouth. I'm like, okay, what's a podcast?
And look at you guys now, like top ranked massage podcast.
I feel like it's also a little bit more than just providing value. It's also doing, I heard Rick Rubin talk about this and I fully identified with it because I was never able to articulate it the way he did. And I'm like,
look what
yes,
she's holding.
I get it. Right. When
obsessed with his book.
When Rick Rubin says that an artist creates with the audience in mind, never. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't create for the audience. I create for me.
Yeah.
The artist creates for themselves and they put it out into the world. And if it's accepted, it's accepted. If it's rejected, it's rejected. But they do it for themselves. The good artist will. And he's like, it's like a diary or journal entry. You don't write that for somebody else. You write that for you. You don't write it for acceptance for somebody else. And so with all of these things that we do, that's one, and I was never able to articulate that. And then I heard him say that. I'm like, oh my God, that's where we're at. All the stuff that we do, we just do it the way we want to do it. We don't think about what's the RMT community going to think about it. What's this other education provider going to think about it? What's our governing body who can freaking throw me into any scenario where they want to strip me of my license? What are they going to think? We just said, fuck it. Let's just do it the way we want to do it. And you know what? Generally, the way we do things or our personality, I'll speak for my personality. I'm like a Guinness. It's either you love it or you hate it. There is no fucking in between on a Guinness. Do you know what I mean? If you love a Guinness beer, you'll love a Guinness beer. If you can't stand a Guinness beer, you can't. That's me, period. If people either kind of dig what I'm really doing and what I'm about, or they can't stand this fucking guy.
Yeah.
Right? And so I'm like, there's enough people that I think would dig what we do, so who the fuck cares? Let's just roll with it. And we just started doing things the way we want to do them. And I think that's the biggest part, or that's the biggest reason why the podcast does decently well.
Mm-hmm.
The courses do well, like all that kind of shit. Massage therapy,
and we are also happier doing these projects, the podcast, Conned Institute, Massage Therapy Media, the
conferences,
because we do them, as Mark said, the way that we would want them done. Like, we do them to appease us and what we think is really great. We've been so much happier just always doing things like that, because the people that come through here, the classes we have, they're filled with our people. You know what I mean? You know, I asked you earlier, who are your ideal clients? We're not teaching to people that don't like us, because those people know right away that they're not going to come here. When we first started the podcast, we used to get a lot of, I'll call it hate mail. We used to get a lot of criticism of people saying, you should do it like this. You should be like this. You're unprofessional. You should do it like this.
Okay, sure.
And you know, when you just said you never found a way to articulate it before Rick Rubin, Mark used to always say, do these people send letters to, you know, the writers of this sitcom or this drama or whatever and say, like, this is what you should do? He's like, I don't understand why so many people feel like we have to do things their way. Like, why are we doing it your way? We're going to do it our way. And if you don't like it, don't listen.
I really appreciate the person who I put a clip up the other day. And I really appreciate the person that listened to the clip. They liked the clip. They wanted to go listen to the episode. And then their last message to me was, next time, put in the episode link with the clip. I'm like, how about I just do it the way I want to fucking do it? How about that? How about that? But I appreciate you listening to it, and I appreciate you.
I think trolls are always looking for a way to be included. And what I've learned is they actually want to, like, they just want to add a boy or add a girl. Like, they want to be a part of it. It's like, they don't know how to, But I just want to, like, circle and highlight and put asterisks next to everything you guys were talking about getting in touch with, like, doing things the way you want to do them, doing what you love, not being so concerned with how it's going to be received. And then in doing that, like, we get to collect proof that exactly who we are is enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, exactly sharing what we want to share. We gather evidence that that is true. But if we keep trying, and I see this all the time with clients, and I know it in myself too, in the past, like, when we keep trying to appease other people, we just continue to gather proof that that's what we have to do. Mm. And we still feel like a failure, even when we succeed, because it's at such a high cost. But I love, like, what you guys are modeling here. I love encouraging it in my coaching clients too, of this idea of, like, take a chance on allowing yourself to be guided by the things that you really love and what you really enjoy doing. And then you get to find an audience that also enjoys receiving what you have to give without you having to, like, bend yourself into a pretzel every time.
Yeah, know? That's the one thing I don't want to do. I don't want to fucking apologize. I don't want to apologize. I don't want to ask for permission, and I don't want to apologize. And it's easy to do that when you just say, fuck it. And then the tribe finds you, and you find the tribe. Then it's all bonfires and dancing.
Absolutely.
That's what I picture tribes doing.
Bonfires and dancing. I like it. before we move any further, Elle, I actually want to, for anybody listening that like really resonates with what you're saying, you know, like the style of coaching you do where you're looking for people who want the next step and how, you know, you help to guide them in goal setting and figuring out like, what is it they want? Why do they want it? And, you know, well, the path to get there.
I loved that answer.
Yeah.
I love that answer with that ridiculous scenario that I created with someone having like what you might think is a really stupid idea and how you just dig deep down and find ways to make this still a coachable moment for someone that's into. I really was into that. That was really cool.
Yeah. And so for anybody listening that like resonates with that mindset and that style of coaching that you have, can you give us some information about where they can find you? Websites, if you're, I mean, I know that you're online, you have an online presence, but how can people find you?
Sure. Easiest way is to go to ellebrowning.com. That's ellebrowning.com. And through that, you can see, you know, access my programs, my one-on-one coaching, how to get in touch with me, and my family constellations workshops. That's the easiest way. People can also join my Facebook group. It's called Next Step Holistic Business Development, but easiest way to get in touch is through my website, lbrowning.com.
The family constellation. I said I was coming back to it and you just said it again. I got to hear. Okay. Can you explain to me, what is this? Who comes to you with this? Like, how did you start doing this? I've never even heard this term before. I looked at your website this morning just to remember what state you were in.
Oh, goodness. It is like notoriously a difficult thing to answer. It's like trying to explain like a novel to someone who hasn't read it or a board game to someone who's never played the game before. We're like, let's just do it. And then that's, you know, I will say, if anything that I have said thus far about, you know, relating to like how we're processing grief or family members who aren't there or projecting, you know, onto other people, you know, as like moms or dads, like if any of that was appealing, that's all rooted in family constellations philosophy. Mm. But basically, family constellations is a philosophy that is based around how to move beyond intergenerational trauma. And it has a basic premise, which is that all of our strengths and all of our challenges have lineages. And so none of it started with us, but things can change with us. And in order to create a different future, we need to take a look at the past so we're not repeating it. What I find often with my coaching clients is that point of resistance where you have the strategy, you know, you have the thing you need to do, but for some reason, you're encountering a lot of resistance to be able to actually implement and make it happen. This might look like negative self-talk, perfectionism, procrastination, inability to manage time. When we get to the root of looking through your family history at in what context does this make sense? Then we can begin to be freed from it and begin to make different choices. So with family constellations, the goal is not necessarily something it's not therapy, though it can be therapeutic. The goal is not necessarily healing. It can be a byproduct. The goal is ultimately finding more freedom of choice to be able to do things differently. Now, there are family constellations workshops where you can meet in person or online. And it's actually more of an embodied experience where we have you choose different people in the workshop to represent different family members so that you can actually have a visual representation of a family dynamic, which is why you'll see in the field in family constellations, there are so many body workers and so many massage therapists who get into this work simply because it is a really embodied way of processing and identifying family dynamics. But I could go on, but I'll kind of keep it at that. If anyone's interested, they can attend one of my workshops. They're really, you know, accessible. And I offer them once a month online. So you can find more info on that on my website too.
I'm going to have to go to this workshop. I have to learn what this is. Like I said, I went on your website just to look at where you're from and I saw family constellations. I'm like, well, what the hell is this?
And I apologize. It's so hard to explain in like a quick soundbite because I think a lot of the experiences, it's like art or like poetry and that it is very much dependent upon the person who experiences it. And I will also say this one caveat. There are some quacks out there. And if you Google it, there's some whack stuff out there where people, you know, it's like any modality, right?
It's anything.
You're gonna have people, yeah. Right? Yeah. So I would say if you Google it and you see some things that are concerning, like don't let that, you know, deter you. I would just say go to someone, you know, you trust.
Interesting. Anything else you want to ask Elle? I realize we've like kept, I didn't realize we had talked so long. Like we've been talking along.
I know, the time's flown by. I mean, I have a question for you guys. I'm curious, you had asked me earlier, we've done talks about like career trajectories and what we've envisioned for ourselves in the future in our careers, like particularly when we were starting out as massage therapists. And I'm thinking, you know, Mark and Amanda, with the businesses that you have, what's on the horizon for you? Like, what are you excited about building towards in the future?
I'm going to let Mark answer that one.
Expanding the conferences. When we rolled into doing conferences, so the quick and dirty on the back end of that is the Canadian Massage Conference and the American Massage Conference, the owners and organizers of that, four individuals, two of them dropped out at some point, and there were two remaining. And they approached us to partner with them. And we had helped them with a couple other conferences and stuff. And it's been going very well. And we've been trying to make some really cool changes to the conference. Again, along the lines of, let's just do it the way we fucking want to do it type of thing. They're very much people like that. And I feel like they were a little short-sighted with how far and how big the conferences could get. And they've had really, really big shows with thousands of people show up.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about the locations, the numbers of conferences per year, the frequency of which they happen. I think they were a little short-sighted with that. And so we've kind of convinced them we need to do this more frequently. And it's starting to happen, so that I'm really charged up for that. Like this is ultimately where I want to land within the next 5 to 7 years. I want to run four big conferences a year, and I want to do nothing else but that. I don't care if the podcast is still alive. I don't care if my continued education company is still alive. I don't care about blah, 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 blah. If we can get to the point within the next 5 to 7 years, we got four conferences rock and roll, and they all make a shit ton of coin for each of them, and we split that up four ways, and I only have to do that for the year, then I'd be a very happy dude.
I love how he looks at me and says, and I only have to do that for the entire year.
Well, it's a lot of work.
But it's fun, it is
so much fun planning the conferences, and we have a really, really great team, because for example, there's one member of our team, Monica, who, like, she's the numbers person, she loves spreadsheets. I get a fucking headache just looking at her Excel sheets with all of our accounting and expense, and I'm like, I don't want to do it.
She loves spreadsheets,
and she loves spreadsheets.
Into spreadsheets that don't even need to be,
it's
put
true.
Into spreadsheets.
100%.
She always wants to bust out a spreadsheet,
Monica and her spreadsheets. But that's great, we're so happy to have her. One of our other partners, Scott, Mark has named him the social coordinator, and that's absolutely what he does. Everywhere we go, he finds the fun shit to do, so that when we do a conference somewhere, we can tell people, like, hey, this is close by. Like, he picks locations that there's, you know, there might be nightlife around, or really cool restaurants or unique tourist attractions, and like he's the social coordinator.
He's also the connections guy.
He, like,
knows
he makes
every fucking person.
But it's because he prioritizes his relationships with people. Like, yep. When he meets someone, if he says he's going to follow up with you, he will follow up with you. Like, there is no doubt. Whereas somebody like me, I might meet someone and with all the best intentions, say I'm going to keep in touch, and my life gets busy and I don't. But Scott will.
Right. And I can't do this. I'm a Guinness, man. There's people that just look at me and they're like, I don't want that.
No, thank you.
We need Guinness in the world.
Right. And then we've got like Mark, who's like the super, super like creative guy. Like, he'll come up with this cockamamie out of the box idea that everybody initially looks at him and goes, are you okay? But we give him a minute to really explain it to us. And most of the time we don't really have the how yet, but we, you know, he has a way of showing us the vision and we're like, okay, yeah, okay, I get that. And then me, I mean, these fuckers need me so much. I got to keep these three in line like you wouldn't believe. I'm like the mom of the group that makes sure, like, guys, okay, we got to do this. And, you know, I'm the person that...
Are you gonna be like COO?
I take the minutes.
Like, Mark is visionary and you're an implementer?
Yep, 100%. Yeah. I take all the minutes. Amazing. I make sure I follow up, like, hey, did you email this person? Did you talk to this association? Do you have this present? Like, so all of us really, like, work really well together. And after a couple of years of doing it, I think we've all kind of hit the stride where, like, it is a lot of work, but I know Monica's doing her spreadsheets. I know Scott's talking to the people. I know Mark's doing the edit. Like, I know it's all happening. So the stress levels are really low. I don't know if you feel that way, but it's like, I know, I trust all you guys and I know you're doing your shit. So I just can do what I need to do.
I don't feel stressed about it.
Yeah.
But I just don't feel stressed about that stuff. Period, but whatever. What do I
think? That's great. It sounds like your team is just so perfectly calibrated, where people get to show up being themselves, doing what they love, and it all contributes to the greater whole.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds awesome. Congrats, guys. Congrats on all your success, and cheers to many more conferences in the future.
Well, Mark's not going to accept your congratulations because then he'd have to accept the criticism.
Exactly. I reject all of it.
But thank you, Al.
So let's do this. Let's leave our listeners with some really usable pieces from you.
It's my favorite.
I'll leave this completely wide open to you in terms of any type of information that you might want to give, any type of value that you might want to drop to an RMT or an LMT or a body worker. I'll just leave this wide open for you to say, hey, this is the scenario and I think this might be a good thing or a bad thing or whatever the case is.
Okay. So here's what's coming up right now that I'm thinking of. Something that's very common with all of us and like all of my coaching clients. Here's some free coaching. Okay. If you're struggling with something and you can't figure out why you can't reach towards a certain goal, and maybe you're self-critical about why that is, like there's something that you feel like is like deficient in you or wrong in you. I can't motivate. I can't make the time. I'm a perfectionist. I'm a procrastinator. It's my imposter syndrome. All the reasons that you tell yourself that you're wrong. Can we take a moment and explore for a second how that's actually working for you? In what context is it keeping you safe? In what context is it so completely logical that you would like avoid this thing or prevent yourself from doing this thing? A quick example, if it's something like, I really want to be posting more online, or I've always wanted to start a podcast, but I just can't make myself do it. We might look at like, well, where in your family history does it make sense that being visible and having a voice wasn't safe? And does that resonate with you currently? Is that something that deep down, maybe this is totally logical and you're not wrong, you're actually right. And then when we do that, all of a sudden, opportunities open where we're not fighting against ourselves so much anymore. And then you can actually start to take a step forward. And this isn't about sugarcoating it or cutting yourself all the slack in the world. No, it's actually just about right-sizing your resistance to yourself and naming what it actually is. So you're not fighting against yourself anymore. And all of a sudden, you have access to more freedom, more choices. And that's my hope for all of you.
Woo! I like it. I like it. I like it.
Well, I want to say one more thing, and that really is to thank you both for the opportunity to sit with you both today. This has been a really illuminating conversation, and I just appreciate having the time to get to know you guys a little bit better and hear more about your story as well.
Right on. Thank you.
Thanks for hanging out. This has been good. Why don't you give us your contact info one more time?
Sure. You can go to my website, lbrowning.com, ellebrowning.com. You can also check out my Facebook group, Next Step Holistic Business Development. And if you want, I have a podcast too. It's called The Beauty We Love, and you can find that on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
Thanks for hanging out. This has been good.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Amanda.
You guys have been listening to Two Massage Therapists in a Microphone. Peace.